speculate on a particular mix of odd and inspiring news headlines in Wendy's Coffee House. Newsmakers with a penchant for the unknown, unexplained, and unusual share their experiences with UFOs, ghost encounters, near-death experiences, and more for your own unique blend of Wendy's Coffee House Curious. And now, here's Wendy.
Sunday night already. Wow. It flies when you're having fun. And this has been a really busy week. Incredible stuff going on. I do have guests coming up tonight. And from UFO Kansas, Kansas MUFON, finding out if we're going to be doing... Oh, there he is. There he is, Chuck Berry. This is a song. It's out in space. Forever. Well, until the aliens from wherever they are find it.
Deep down in Louisiana, close to New Orleans, way back up in the woods among the evergreens.
27 songs on the golden record attached to Voyager 1. They launched it in 1977. And John Lennon said that if you tried to give rock and roll another name, you might call it Chuck Berry. So there he is. Infamy. Yeah, 90 years old. It's amazing. That's the time fly thing again. Anyway, so there he is, and he's out, launched into the stratosphere. Did you know, I was fascinated by all this stuff. I've seen it before, but kind of, you know, it's fades fast. On that same phonograph record collection of golden hits from Earth, there are other songs, Aborigine songs. They've got Morning Star, Devil Bird. They also have Melancholy Blues, and that's Louis Armstrong at his Hot 7. The Navajo Indians' Night Chant. That's on there. And what did we say? Because we have several little greetings that we, in 55 different languages that we sent out there. Friends of space, how are you all? Have you eaten yet? Come visit us if you have time. Now, you would hate to see that one misinterpreted. Okay? Have you eaten yet? Okay. Just please visit on a full stomach. All right. That might be more helpful. That's in Arabic. Okay. The other one here, English, hello from the children of planet Earth. We've got Polish, welcome creatures from beyond the outer world. And Swedish, greetings from a computer programmer in the little university town of Ithaca on the planet Earth. That was very quaint, okay? Sounds of the Earth, what did we send? Well, we wanted them to hear our volcanoes and our earthquakes and thunder. Thunder, that's impressive. Okay, what animals did we include? Chimpanzee. Chimpanzee, also the tame dog and the wild dog, the counter of each, just, you know. Footsteps, laughter, Morse code. Good luck with that. And the horse and cart. I don't, yeah, okay, so that's kind of interesting. Anyway, and then the photographs, and you can go on NASA's site here and check these out too, but the photographs, we sent them the sun, a picture of the sun, and a DNA structure. Also, we wanted them to know what we look like, so we sent them a diagram of a male and female. And then we sent Jane Goodall and the chimps. Sounds like a rock group. Anyway, and Jane deserves it. She's cool. But we also sent a picture of a Chinese dinner party from Time Life Books. They were gracious enough to include that. X-ray of a hand. The Golden Gate Bridge, taken by Ansel Adams. Perfect. And sunset with birds. Okay, anyway, I just thought that it's fascinating that, you know, what we would send out to space, hoping that it might make some kind of a difference to whomever is going to find this thing in the distant, near, or far future. Have no idea. And it could be even, you know, a time shift, and they found it years ago, and we just don't know it. Okay, there it is, the secret Antarctic map revealing the coordinates of how to get to the hollow Earth. Did you want to know? It's out there. And we now have the secret map, which is... means it's no longer secret. But according to a Russian journalist who analyzes the KGB documents, they've released a folder called Orion, and this is out there somewhere. I don't know if this is legit or not, but dear comrade, this message will be a surprise to you. Okay. Anyway, the Hollow Earth map is out there just in case you want to get there and go there. You'll have to have friends because this isn't something just anybody can do. I'm sure they're looking for you if they're there waiting to see who, you know, breaks the code and gets in the door where they shouldn't be coming in. The other thing that's fascinating, Tom DeLonge, he's artist, music, musician, and known to be a fringe artist, which is fine. Blink 182, the band. He says that he's got information he will be releasing shortly about the aliens. And the WikiLeaks, that was some of the connections, the conversations he had with John Podesta, with the manager for Hillary Clinton's campaign, just in case you forgot that. Anyway, it continues to have legs. And so there's a little video now. I'm going to put that on the Coffee House blog, Wendy's Coffee House blog. And it includes Grant Cameron, who has been researching a lot of this UFO stuff. And he's decided, okay, maybe Tom has some information, but it isn't what we really need. It might be disinformation. We're not sure, but just in case it is, the word is going out. Okay, so we're informing you. You may be uninformed, even though you think you're informed. It's confusing, isn't it? I know. And dead IRL. This is Mostly Human on CNN Go. If you could create your own little, icon, your digital version of yourself, would you want to? Well, somebody wanted to. And so her best friend, when he died unexpectedly, she decided this would be an experiment to bring him back to life. And she'd been working on, he actually had been working on a project, an AI startup, for a couple of years. And so what happened was he's now back to life and she's having conversations with him. And I don't know if this is good or bad, because it really puts off the grief process, and maybe that's okay, but it's fascinating one way or the other. So that was one of the little things I stumbled onto over the weekend. And the other thing that is really fascinating, it's fascinating to me. There's a bird couple who every year, like for 14 years, this stork flies back to the same rooftop in Croatia. And I haven't seen anything this year. It's about this time that the stork flies back. What happened was his partner was crippled and was shot by a hunter, couldn't go anywhere. So she stays on this rooftop, and every year they bring up their chicks. And it's really cool. If you have a chance to check it out, it's the ultimate lovebird love story. The stork on the rooftop in Croatia with his partner. True love. Birds. It works. Cheerios giving away 100 million wildflower seeds to help honeybees. Not a bird story, but a bee story. How's that? Uh-huh. Okay. Anyway. And get them while you can, because they say they're going fast. There was a campaign. The buzz is all about getting wildflowers. All right. I don't have time to get into the story. I'll post a link and you're good for that. In the meantime, though, we're going to talk UFOs in Kansas. I sent a picture to Stan Seba to see if he could tell me if there was anything to this picture. It's a very unusual photograph, and he was going to try and see if there was anything to it. But he's going to be talking to me about what's going on in Kansas, and the UFO sightings are up all across the country, so it's not just us. It's going on all over the place, and he's going to be here along with Nancy D'Souza, and we're going to be talking, well, of course, UFOs, next on Wendy's Coffee House. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. Hi there, I'm Wendy. And my guests tonight, UFO hunters, researchers. All sorts of stuff happens in Kansas that we don't always get to hear about because, well, people are too afraid to talk about it, for one thing. But
hello?
Can you hear me, Stan? Stan Seba.
Barely.
I know. Something with a microphone. We're trying to get it to...
Are you there?
Try a different... Let me try. Cody Lee, can I try a different microphone and see if it makes any difference? On this one? Does this one have a better volume at all? She's in the other room.
It's not okay. Even, yeah, it's not even on.
Oh, that was not on. Okay. Any better luck with that one? Oh, my. That
much
actually
better.
Has
much
volume.
Better.
Yeah, the main microphone here in the studio is on the fritz. So we're going to use this one. Because it actually works. Hi, Stan.
Okay. Hi, how's it going?
It's going good. I'm glad you can hear me. Hey, I was just looking at some of the stuff to see if there were any new reports on Kansas. Unfortunately, nothing recent. But I had been talking to somebody earlier saying you're getting unique reports that you haven't had before, that the kinds of things that people are telling you about are just a little bit different. Is that real? Is this something unique?
It depends. The only thing I can say is when it comes to reports, we get all kinds of reports on different types of subjects, different types of entities, so to speak. We had one not too long ago, even though it was a historical case, of somebody in the western part of the state who saw a two-legged entity that the only way I can describe it is it was like a head with legs growing out of it. It was a oval-shaped head or body-head combination with a face on it, and it had two legs. The strange thing was these legs had knees that bent backwards to what human knees would bend. It was sort of like this object had dog legs, so to speak.
Wow. Yeah, that would be unique. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, those are kind of cryptid reports. We do get those kinds of reports. We get reports of strange objects, of course. There was one in eastern or northeastern Kansas where somebody saw an object that they said resembled a giant squid.
Wow.
In the sky.
Okay. Okay, yeah, and that I've actually heard. The kind of an energy type formation that is a little transparent but fluid and maybe a pastel color, like pink, orange, yellow, that kind of thing.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, because I know somebody else who saw one of those. Okay, and Nancy D'Souza's with you, right?
Yes. Hi, Wendy.
Hi, Nancy. Nice to talk with you. I'm glad to talk with you guys both because you are both now doing your own show and
yes.
That just started. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. It is the official MUFON UFO radio show, and it's on, I don't know if I can say the station name or not.
Of course you can, yes.
We can? All right.
Yes.
It's on KGRA, which KGRA is a digital-based network. So people who wish to listen to it, it's Tuesday nights, 6 p.m. local time till 8 p.m. It's on KGRARadio.com.
Okay. All right. So, and that just kicked off, basically. So this is all brand new. Do you take reports to then talk about during the show?
Well, we basically go through the MUFON case management system database, and we pull cases from there. Some of them are older cases. We are getting more recent cases on the show also.
Okay. What's the most recent?
The most recent one is from April of last year, and it happened to a witness in Tennessee. And basically, they had about roughly 2.5 to 3 hours of missing time. The strange thing about this case was, right before his event or his experience, he was recording with his phone some video in a workshop that's in an outbuilding from his residence. And he set the phone down while it was still recording. And he recorded pieces of this event that can be heard audibly if you listen closely to the audio recording. And all I can say is it's something that when I listened to it, it made my hair stand on end.
Wow.
And I mean, that was the subject of our show last week. That will be the subject of, it'll be the second part we're going to bring to listeners for our show this week. If people wish to tune in.
Yeah.
But, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Do you have audio you can share on the show? Is that what you're doing as well? Is it available for public to listen to?
Well, we're trying to share it on the air. We are also attempting to, basically, when our shows are recorded, because they are recorded live, they are put on the website for KGRA, and if people sign on, it's a free account, basically. But if people sign on to download the shows, on the second show, the part two of this particular case that we're looking at, we are going to attempt to tack on his entire audio file of what was recorded.
Okay.
And it's roughly about 2 hours, 20 minutes, 2.5 hours of audio.
Wow. That's a lot.
Oh, yes. The only problem was, at best estimate, he was about 25 feet away from his phone. It was sitting face down on the bench. I was able to hear things in the audio file, but I had to turn the volume of my computer all the way up and close my eyes and listen very carefully.
Okay, but can you do anything?
But things can't be heard.
Can you do anything to enhance it? I mean, you know, with the technology, can you do anything to enhance that?
It has gone through one enhancement process. We do have engineers at KGRA trying to bring out more of the audio to where it can be heard easily rather than having to close your eyes and listen carefully.
Right. Okay. Well, that sounds okay. So now I'm curious. So what was it that made your hair stand on end?
Well, without going into too much detail, this witness, basically, after he recorded this video that he wanted to share with a family member, he set his phone down, and he was compelled to go outside of his workshop. And when he went outside, he saw a bright blue light. And the next thing that he can remember consciously is that he was laying on the ground looking up at the sky. In his regression, he was able to remember dealing with at least 3 to 4 different types of non-human entities. And in the audio files, he was being asked questions. And these are voices that you can hear on the audio files. There's one point where one of the entities says to this individual, "Remember, I'm your friend." And just the sound of that voice from that phrase, I mean, it made my hair stand on end. It did not sound like a normal human voice.
Wow.
It sounded like something that was processed.
Yeah, like
that's
mechanical?
Described.
Yeah, mechanical.
Yes, very much so. But it was kind of a lilting, "Remember, I'm your friend" type of phrase, but it sounded mechanical.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that immediately creeped me out, to be polite. I just had this really weird kind of reaction, visceral reaction to it, I'll put it that way.
Okay, yeah. Well, in the next break, I'll tell you, because that voice is something I'm familiar with. And that's what's so fascinating. That's why I like this stuff, because it's easier for me to talk about this, because once you've had an experience of some kind, there's no longer any, let's wait and see. I want to know more, and I would like to hear other stories to see what the commonalities are, because once you have been through this, there are some signatures once you know that this is going on, then you can say, that's legit. Yep, that's it. And you just go through the things that you can identify as indicating that, yes, this is a real experience. And so when somebody else says that, then you know, yeah, been there, done that. And that's so, for me, talking about this and talking to people who've had these experiences is just part of getting the word out and saying, hey, this is legit. It's not everybody just going out, you know, having a fun time making up stories. It's saying, come on, pay attention, wake up, there's something going on, let's find out what it is. And it's taking a while.
I agree. And I mean, we've had very strange things happen talking to the MUFON investigator who looked into this case. Her name is Angelia Shear, and she is the chief investigator for the Tennessee chapter of MUFON. And I'll tell you now, you need to have this lady on your show, because she would be able to tell you more details about this investigation. And, I mean, we've broken it up over 2 shows, and we're trying to devote about 2 hours to this story. We're not even scratching the surface.
That's excellent, because the more content you get, the better you've got in terms of trying to validate it and figure out what else is going on and where the connections are and where the similarities are to other stories and possibly other parts of the country.
Exactly. And, I mean, that's one thing we're doing, is we're looking at cases from all over the country and trying to present them on our show.
Okay, and when people make a report, they report to you, Kansas, or the national, or the, where does the report go?
The way it goes is when somebody sees an object or somebody has some type of event or some kind of experience, they go to the MUFON website, or they can call a 1-800 number for MUFON, and they basically provide the details and a synopsis of what they saw or what they experienced.
Okay, Stan,
hold on.
At that
point, it's put into the CMS, and then it's filtered down to individual state directors who assign it to field investigators.
Okay, hang on just a second. We're going to take a break here and come back. When we come back, we'll find out, you know, how this works if you have a sighting to report as well. And I'll tell you about my little mechanical experience. It's just mind-boggling because until it happens to you, you are on the fence. This can't happen, but it does. Wendy's Coffee House continues next on KCMO. Okay, if you have had a sighting, UFO, then you can call MUFON and report your sighting. And as Stan Seba was saying earlier, from MUFON, Kansas, then it gets filtered down state by state, and they send investigators out to find out what was going on. And Nancy, I don't mean to leave you out. Nancy D'Souza, are you also part of an investigation team as well?
Yes, I am the assistant state director for Kansas, and I'm also a field investigator.
Okay.
Yes.
So you go out and then and try and figure out what happened if somebody gives you a sighting that, you know, involves physical evidence.
It doesn't always involve physical evidence, but yes, I do that, and I interview people, I write reports.
Okay.
And then that report is put on this CMS system, the case management system. And those reports are looked at, and then we will look at the reports that the scientific review board reviews and for possible reports on the show.
Okay. Now, I promised that I would share a report that I didn't make this report. I made another report, and this one, I don't know, it just didn't seem like it was appropriate because it wasn't a vessel or a vehicle or anything like that. The other one was a visual. This one is an auditory, and I believe it was 2013 or 2011. There are two incidents that happened. The one I reported is on your website, and I talked with Mike McCord. He took the, my friend, Margie Kay, said, you need to report this. I'm like, okay, fine. I'll go ahead and submit it. But that was the one where it was a visual in the bedroom. And this other thing also happened in the bedroom, too. And I had a premonition, same thing, that something would happen and said, you need to be, you need to let go of your fear. And I thought, okay, I'm okay with fear. I'm not easily frightened. And I didn't think it would be a problem. And so then 3 o'clock in the morning, when I woke up and then was aware of something in the room or in the space, and the voice, the auditory, whatever it is, said, Winnie. And it was a mechanical type voice. It couldn't enunciate to say my name, Wendy. But the minute I felt that vibration, I automatically, from toe to head, froze. And I thought, as that's happening, I'm realizing, oh my gosh, I'm blocking it because I'm freezing right now. I've frozen and I was, oh, shoot, darn, it went away, you know, knowing that. And then, you know, of course, this little, the intuitive thing is, you know, just laughing, said, we told you, you need to get rid of your fear. And I thought, oh, this is what they're talking about. This is what it's about, is that it's that fight or flight syndrome. We automatically go into fear from something that or about something that's so incredibly, totally unhuman that it changes your perspective. And at that moment, I know exactly what it felt like to be absolutely scared spitless, because there was the immediate, you know, shockwave goes through your body, and you automatically go into that fight or flight fright stage. Does that make sense?
Yes. And also,
it does.
Yeah. Or denial.
Yeah.
Of the whole.
It's like, this can't be happening. Well, fortunately, I had that intuitive heads up. I had a prompt that said, this will happen, and you need to be aware. You need to get rid of your fear, because we can't connect until that goes, you know, until you deal with that. And I'm like, well, okay, fine. And I didn't think it was a problem until that was demonstrated. And it's like, oh, yeah, that's pretty much, that's an indicator that there are some barriers that we are working through. So anyway, that's why I thought, okay, this is familiar with me. And I understand what you're saying when you say this mechanical voice, because just that vibration, when you, when somebody comes up to you and it's somebody familiar and you feel comfortable, the voice is reassuring, your mom's voice, a lover's voice, it's a comfort. But when there's something that that you sense there's a danger or there's an unfamiliarity, then you physically shift, and that's an emotional, all of a sudden you go into that incredible, I think, in terms of protection, sense of something is wrong. Something is wrong. I need to get out of here. And I knew it, but I knew I'd already been given it was an okay thing. And so I was upset more because I had blocked it without intending to, and then realizing what had happened, going, well, okay. And it hasn't happened again. Don't know that it's going to be any better when it does, but yeah. So just, there you go. The mechanical.
The only thing I can forewarn you, Wendy, is, after talking with other experiencers, expect it to happen again. And it usually will happen right before some kind of life-changing event.
Yes. It's amazing how that works. And there's a whole lot of stuff that we don't understand that's affiliated with this, and that's what I wanted to get into, because the stuff you're talking about with the cryptoid, there's also a paranormal element that is very front and center with this stuff, and that until recently hadn't even been addressed. Are you seeing more of that connection?
Me personally, not very much, but we are getting more reports of paranormal events in the MUFON CMS. The thing is, we don't look at paranormal per se, but I mean cryptids, we do have an expert, a gentleman out of West Virginia who does look into cryptid reports. He is basically the director for that kind of report, and we kind of funnel our stuff to him. But we do now ask questions of witnesses if they have had paranormal experiences, if they've experienced instances of telepathy, for example, or if, they've had premonitions, things like that. That has recently come in the past 3 years with MUFON. Before, we didn't pay attention to paranormal type events in experiencers' lives, but now we do.
And see, I think that's really crucial, because there are a lot of other elements that go into that. With mine, there was a barometric pressure shift. There was a time change, a time shift, and there were, telepathic prompts saying expect this or expect that, and it came, completely un. There was no invitation. It was completely unexpected, and then these things started happening, and you just don't have a way to prepare anybody for that, in my opinion.
No,
you're absolutely right.
Like you said, once you've had an experience like this, it's very hard to forget. You keep reliving it, and that's how people become field investigators at MUFON. Because they want answers.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, I think when you have somebody else who's witnessing it with you, it really makes a difference. And so I like the stories when there are more multiple witnesses, whether it's a family or a couple, because I think for them it gives them a lot more comfort knowing that this was indeed something that happened and they can't explain it away. And yeah, the denial is there, but at the same time, there's a thing of asking more questions and becoming a lot more curious.
I agree. And as for multiple witness cases, for example, Nancy became involved with MUFON because she had a sighting and she was with her family at the time. And the weird thing was about that experience, a report came in of the exact same event that Nancy witnessed, which she could probably tell you in more detail. I don't know if we have time, but the other witnesses were in another state, and they saw the exact same thing she did. There were a total of about 12 to 15 witnesses altogether with two reports of the same event.
Okay.
So we always pay attention to that.
You opened the door. So, Nancy, yeah, let's. What did you see?
Okay, well, this was in 2012. It was actually June 12th. And my in-laws had a pontoon boat on Wyandotte Lake. And when you're on Wyandotte Lake, it feels very low. It feels like there are mountains all the way around.
Yeah.
It's an old lake, and it's really beautiful.
I agree. I've been there.
And we were sitting, it was about 10 o'clock at night because we love going out at night. And it was dark, it was a Sunday night, and all the other pontoon boats had gone in. And we were looking in the westerly direction. And over one of the mountaintops, or large hills, a ball of light, orange in color, went, you know, ascended.
Mm-hmm.
And within a second, two more lights were underneath it in a triangular formation, perfect triangular formation. And then under that, two more triangular formations of orange lights appeared. But when they got up to about a 70-degree elevation, all of these lights started dancing around. Some of them went on, some of them stayed off, and at the end of a few seconds, there were four lights and a straight horizontal row, all lined up perfectly even in space. And then all of a sudden, the fifth light turned on, and then the whole thing turned counterclockwise and went down below the hill. And my sister-in-law said, "I'm going to start the boat. We have to go behind the cove and see where they went." And we drove behind the cove, and there was nothing. And during the whole event, we were saying, "What is that? Oh, my gosh, do you see that?" I mean, it was just small talk, but even to this day, when we get together, we have conversations and we talk about what we saw. It was so bizarre. And then about 20 minutes later, in Missouri, in Riverview, there was a woman and two children in their back porch, on their back porch, looking over the cliff, and they saw a straight line formation of five lights coming towards them. And then she went next door and got a retired airline pilot. And he looked at the lights, and they all stood there together, and they couldn't understand what they were seeing. And these five lights made a right angle turn and went south, and they disappeared.
See, that's fascinating. That's fascinating. The fact that the same night, the same kind of formation, that you had two separate reportings. That had to make you feel a little bit more like validated.
it was tremendous that I got validated, and that really jump-started my interest in ufology.
Okay.
And actually, Stan was my field investigator.
Uh-huh. Okay, there you go. Hang on, we got to take a quick break. We're going to take a break and come back. But I want to find out a little bit more in terms of what's going on, and if somebody, have you had people try to give you, you know, a false report, all right, and how you can separate that, the wheat from the chaff, I guess. We're going to talk more with Stan Seba and Nancy D'Souza. These are the folks who are the investigators for the Kansas MUFON. And just more about that coming up here on Talk Radio KCMO. Wendy's Coffee House on Talk Radio KCMO. If you missed any of the show, you can check out the podcast. It uploads pretty much after the show on Audio Boom. And Wendy's Coffee House is the name of the show. Wendy'sCoffeeHouse.com. That's the blog spot. I'll upload some of this stuff or at least put some links on later, like the Chuck Berry stuff. I'm looking at right now UFOstalker.com. Stan, is this where a lot of this stuff goes for MUFON?
Actually, that's where a lot of the stuff for MUFON filters down to.
Aha. Okay. And because it says last week sightings were up 42%, last month up 247%. No, up 36%.
Yes.
And up 31% over the year. It's like all across the board, way up.
Yes. There's a variety of reasons. Again, the weather's been nice in many parts of the country, so people might actually be getting out and looking up. One of the problems, and I believe I mentioned it before, in Kansas, we're a culture of farmers, traditionally speaking, and we're used to looking at the ground. The only time we look up is when there's bad weather. But you have to look up in order to see things in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the problems. But when the weather gets nice, people are out driving around. And when you're driving on a long commute or even a medium-length commute, so to speak, you're on a highway and all you have to see are road signs, maybe a few billboards. And if you're out in the countryside here in Kansas, Missouri, et cetera, you know, you don't have much to look at other than the landscape and the beautiful big sky country, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
But when people look up, you know, that's when they start to see things. One trend that I will point out, and this is nationwide, probably worldwide, the biggest contributors to MUFON reports are pet owners and smokers. Because we get a lot of reports that start out with, I went to take my pet out to use the bathroom, or, I went outside to smoke a cigarette. I looked up in the sky and I saw these weird lights. And, you know, that's usually how a good number of our reports, I will say around 30% of them start.
Okay. And my dog, when I saw the one inside that was a visual, the dog was sleeping on the side of the bed, and the dog's kind of growling, and I thought he's growling at the cat. And so I'm kind of, you know, tempted to ignore it. This is the middle of the night, of course, and yeah, right, okay. And then he growled again, and I thought, well, you know, I'll just spy. And so I opened my eyes just a little bit to see this little, whatever it was a round, like a disc shape with red lights on it, red and green. I call it a Christmas tree at UFO, and it was about a plate size, maybe 13 inches around diameter, 13 to 15, right about 6 inches inside the window and 6 inches below the ceiling. And this is the one I did report. Okay, so I'm ballparking it here, just memory, but that he told me it was there, and I'm like, and so the minute I tried to focus on it, because I realized I am seeing something. And I start focusing, trying to count how many lights are there and what they look like and all that. And then it shifted and goes outside the window. But the dog is the one that got my attention. I would not have known unless he had growled. So that also let me know the dog saw it. It wasn't just me.
Sometimes animals, specifically cats, they can see into different light spectrums that humans can't see into. Same with dogs.
Yes.
Dogs. And they can see more into an infrared spectrum. Cats can see partially into infrared, also the ultraviolet spectrum. When I owned cats, I was always fascinated with how they would look at something and they would be tracking something with their vision that I couldn't see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I've always been curious, you know, what are they looking at? Are they seeing something specific or not? But when it comes to UFOs, another thing that kind of amazes me, there are some reports that MUFON gets, and I mean, this is nationwide again, where people use night vision devices, and when they don't have the infrared on, because the infrared can completely blind your picture, but when they don't have the infrared light source on, and when they're just looking at the enhanced light source, there are some amazing pictures out there, and there have been some amazing reports of people seeing things mostly triangles, sometimes saucer-shaped objects that come very clearly with that night vision technology.
Isn't John Kelly, I think he was a former reporter, I think he also has that night vision or sells some of that night vision equipment. I'm trying to remember.
Yes, he does, but there's some debate on some of the things that he does submit and some of the things that he does post on the Internet. One problem, and like you mentioned before the break, with false reports or hoax reports, there are times when people will see an object and it is completely and totally unknown. And then it's sort of like fishing. Once you see that UFO, so to speak, or that unknown object, you go out night after night and you keep looking for something, and a meteorite, if they get a picture of it, they call it a UFO. Or if they see a plane off in the distance, it's a UFO.
Mm-hmm.
And it's some people have called it the prophet syndrome. Okay, somebody makes a proclamation, it comes true, and then all of a sudden they start making many more proclamations, whether they come true or not.
Yeah.
People do.
Yes. Yeah. You want it so badly.
Again, when you were talking about hoaxes, yes, we've had quite a few hoax cases. And when I say quite a few, by definition, in the neighborhood of 3 to 5% of the total reports that have come in over the past decade.
Wow.
And the hoax cases always kind of impress me because, for example, we had one witness submit 3 photographs, and this witness stated in their synopsis that they took the pictures, and these pictures were taken the same day,
mm-hmm.
within hours of each other. But with most photographs, especially digital photographs, there is a metadata file attached and embedded in the file.
Yeah.
Unless it's been altered or changed or passed around so many times, usually this metadata file is intact. And when we looked at the photos that this witness submitted for this state, for Kansas, it was a case where the pictures were actually taken over a 3-year period at different times of the day.
Ah.
When I interviewed this witness, I just kind of let him tell me the story of how the pictures came about. He told me this wonderful story about how he and his girlfriend slash fiance were driving along and they saw these objects and they stopped their car. And from the late evening to the, from the early evening to the late evening, they were able to get these amazing pictures of what they were saying were UFOs. These were naturally identified objects, and, I mean, for example, the night picture they submitted, it was once we kind of enhanced the background, we were able to tell that this was a light on a house on a hill. And, again, you know, I let him tell his story, and then I said, you know, we've been looking at the metadata files on these pictures, and, you know, I don't think they were taken, you know, at the same location, at the same time of day, or roughly within 6 hours of each other. And he finally kind of fessed up to it and said, well, it was actually taken over a couple of days. And then I let him retell the story, and then I pointed out to him, well, you know, according to this information I'm looking at right now, these pictures were taken over a 3-year period.
Ouch.
And he went back and changed his story, and uh-huh. It was kind of a case where I kind of had to bite my tongue every time he was retelling his story, because these were identifiable objects. And again, you know,
yeah.
Sorry there, sir, but yeah. You didn't send us some UFO pictures.
Okay.
And since I brought that up, with the 3 pictures that you sent to me.
Oh, yeah.
The first one that appeared to be of something within the grass.
Mm-hmm.
There is no way we can determine what that is unless we're able to find those objects or a sample of those objects. The second picture that you sent to me, which was, it looks like 2 bands of white fuzzy material at the top and bottom of the photograph, and what appears to be a picture and a wall and a door in the background. Again, that we can't do anything with. But the third picture you submitted, there's a white orb or circular object in the middle of a picture that was taken above the roof of a house.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember what day and what time of day it was when you took that picture?
It would have been late afternoon, and I probably have it written on my calendar. I do a journal.
Okay. The problem is, like I said, with the metadata files, there are no metadata files associated with these pictures. If you could send a direct copy of the original, or if you could attach the original to an email and send them to me again, there's one person that I want to send that picture to for him to make a determination. And if you could also include the time and the date when you took this picture, then that will give us some resources to verify what it is. I'll be honest, it looks like a celestial body, but in the late afternoon, depending on the time of year, celestial bodies aren't visible.
Yeah, it's daytime. Yeah, that was our problem, too. Plus, it was a telepathic prompt to go out and take a picture. Okay.
Well, that's something else to add to the investigation, so to speak. And, I mean, I know we're probably running out of time, and you're about ready to cut to the end of the show.
Yeah.
But in a nutshell, we do want to look at this picture, and this may be something of interest, especially to move. I have somebody lined up to take a look at this, and they're a nationally known photo analyst. And if you can resubmit it sometime at a later date, we'll be happy to come back and give you the results of what they say it is.
I will. Hey, you guys, thank you. Both Nancy and Stan, we got to get out of here. I got to go. But if you're listening, check out Kansas MUFON, and I'll post the links on the website, wendyscoffeehouse.com. Thank you, guys. And good luck with your show.
Hopefully
people will tune in.
Thank you.
All right. And thank you for listening. If you have any questions, again, wendyscoffeehouse.com. That's where to go. In the meantime, look up and stay curious. See ya.
.7 FM and AM 710 KCMO. 101.1 KCFX HD2. Kansas City's most stimulating talk. KCMO.